This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Joyce Goh and you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. Today on the show, we have Dato' Sri Mir Sadiq Habib, Managing Director of Habib Jewels. Dato', welcome to the show.
Thank you, Joyce.
Well, Habib turns 60 this year. Congratulations.
Thank you.
The company's journey began in 1958, starting out at a small shop at Pitt Street, Penang, by your father, Datuk Haji Habib Muhammad Abdul Latif. And that little shop there still stands today, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. The shop is still there. And it's actually a quite a historical place because it's actually an original Jawi Peranakan shop house.
I've been there. It's very nice. So from a small family business in Penang, Habib now has expanded to sell your products in Indonesia, Brunei, Singapore, the US and Europe. Talk to us about the evolution and expansion of the Habib business over the past 60 years.
Okay, so as you have rightfully said, that it was started by my father when he was very young.
So how old was he when he started?
He was in his 20s, but before that he was having a partnership, so he started on his own in 1958, and we started off with diamond jewelries, which is quite different from the diamond jewelry that you find now. Intan is also diamond. It's like a substitute for diamond. It's what we call a rose cut diamond. So a lot of the products that we produce was intan and also other gemstones. So during the early days, in the 50s and 60s, we also did sell gold. And, you know, jewelry was purchased not just as adornment, it was also as investment those days. So a lot of people would just come and buy gold items and then they just keep it and they don't put their money in the banks, right?
So
whenever
stash.
They need money, they come back to us and sell their old jewelries and send their children for studies and things like that. At the same time, there used to be a lot of tourists going to Penang. As you know, Penang was a free port at that time, especially the American GIs during the Vietnam Wars and Korean War. They would come and buy different interesting gemstones as well. So I remember that when I was very, very young. You know, all these different colorful gemstones they used to come and buy for their wife or their mistress or whoever, you know. It was very interesting those days.
So things have changed so much and shifted. As you mentioned, people used to invest in gold as an investment, but now not so much, right? Do people buy jewelry as an investment?
It is a very deep tradition in our country. That people still buy jewelry as investment as well as adornment.
Okay, so the trend is still there.
The trend is still there because what else can you buy and enjoy wearing it and then it's still an investment? If you really take a long-term view, for example, gold prices have always moved up. And because of that, you know, there's so much confidence in it and it may not be as much as before, but a small percentage of investment, people still do put it in gold. Sometimes even in gold bars. Gold bar sales has gone up quite a bit, actually.
Listed in 1998, Habib is the first public listed jeweler in Malaysia. And it was a very difficult time at that time. I think the currency crisis hit. Exchange rate was 2.5 to the USD. That went to 4 overnight. What was it like to list at such a tough time?
Okay. I think that was probably one of the most challenging time for us. Because, you know, we were selling gold at 26 ringgit a gram or something like that. And then overnight, it went up to almost 40 ringgit. Almost double. And also, I remember we were owing our... Because when we buy diamonds and all that, we buy on credit terms. So, like, when we were owing our supply is about 10 million US, for example, from, you know, 25 million, we have to end up paying like almost 40 million. That was a very challenging period. But the good thing also is we are a very entrepreneurial company. So we came up with all kinds of strategies to overcome that challenge during that period. And one thing I remember is that's the time that we started going doing export in a big way. Mm. So we didn't even realize that, our goods have so much demand overseas. So we started selling in international auctions and having exhibition all over the world where we started selling in US dollars. And then that really, really helped. As well as, we ran on a very big campaign where people can just come back and sell their old jewelries, and we paid at a much higher price than what they have purchased, So, and people would just trade in. Like, for example, even though the gold price is high, they can just sell back at a much higher price and just change for our latest collection.
Well, your family took the company private and Hubbit was delisted in 2005. Mm-hmm. Any plans to relist the company?
At the moment, we don't have any plan, except if there are reasons for us to list, yes, we will. But we are quite happy with what we are doing at the moment because I feel that I can just focus in the operations of the business. And, today, Habib, it is not just the jewelry that we are doing. As a group, we also do other things. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, franchising of international brands that we sell, for example, Pandora.
Yes.
And then we have some timepieces. We have quite a few new watches, like Ice Watch, and we have just introduced another 5 different new brands. And we also have just introduced a new brand called Le Georgette. It's from France. It's another jewelry brand. And as well as we have some special diamonds like Hearts on Fire. These are the world's most perfectly cut diamonds. So a lot of different brands that we bring from all over the world, which we market here.
Yeah, notice that Habib has diversified. Pandora, I think you went in. This is a Danish jewelry brand, and this was in 2014. Mm-hmm. You've also started an Islamic pawn shop, and you ventured into the hotel industry as well through your Jewels Hotel in Kota Baru. Can you share with us how are the different business segments performing, and how much do they contribute to your earnings in terms of percentage?
Okay. So I think as far as the other business is concerned, like the Islamic pawn shop is called Aranu Express. Itself is there's synergy in what we do, for example, because even though it's a microfinance business, but it's got to do with jewelry as a collateral. The property part, I mean, the hotel was just a fun thing that we were doing because we used to have a factory in Kota Baru, and we just tried, we had that space.
It's not like you're going to go seriously into the
hotel.
It
was just
business.
Something that we were testing, but okay. We do have a lot of investment in properties. So at the moment, it contributes about 20% of our turnover, all the other businesses that we have. So retail is still about 80%. Mm-hmm. But in retail, we have other brands like Pandora, which contribute quite a big portion of our turnover.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, are you looking at any other new business ventures to diversify into?
Yes, we always have a very open mind because the value of the core value of our company itself, we are very entrepreneurial in nature. So we always try to look at other things. I think the e-commerce has become a very important part of businesses, mm-hmm. and we cannot ignore that. Mm. That's an area that we are seriously looking into. And we are also looking out for, what's our next Pandora and what's the new brands, international brands.
But still jewelry brands.
Not necessarily. Mm. We can go into fashion. We can go into other areas that's got synergy with what we do. I would say that our core competency is in operations and marketing. Mm. So with that, I think as our base, we can always do other businesses as well.
Speaking about going online, with customers shifting into the digital platform nowadays, what is your digital strategy? Because I notice your products are on online platforms such mm-hmm. as Lazada and all that. But for your own actual Habib online strategy, digital strategy. How are you going about that?
Even though people feel that there is, jewelry is a touch and feel, they would like to have a look at it. It's also quite emotional, and then there's experiential selling and all that. But we also realize that a lot of people do shop online. So this is something that we cannot ignore.
Mm-hmm.
So we are seriously looking into this area because even though people do survey, online and offline work together. Because sometimes people would walk into stores and survey and look at the product, and they go back and order online. And on the other side is like the other side of the coin is when somebody wants to buy a diamond ring for their wedding, they do all their survey online, and then they come to our store to actually buy it. You know,
yeah, that sounds like me.
Yes. Yeah. So it's a very, very important part of our business. But we have been working with platforms like Lazada,
yes,
which has worked very well.
Okay.
And we just completed the 11/11. So there'll be a big promotion during 12/12. So we have started to also produce only online exclusive jewelries. That means you wouldn't be able to buy it offline or in the stores, so that there's no confusion for the consumers who are actually online buyers.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm speaking to Dato Sri Mir Sadiq Habib, Managing Director of Habib Jewels. After this, we'll take a look at the outlook of the jewellery business moving forward and the fast-shifting consumer trends. Stay tuned to The Breakfast Grill on The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to The BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Good morning. You're listening to The Breakfast Grill, and my guest today is Dato' Sri Mir Sadiq Habib, Managing Director of Habib Jewels. Dato, earlier we spoke about the change in retail trends going into the whole digital world. Now let's dive deeper into the fast-changing shift in consumer trends. It is said that millennials are killing the diamond industry, largely because of growing debt and them having to grapple with high cost of living, coupled with them increasingly shunning diamonds as they view it as an industry tainted with conflict and exploitation. What are you doing to draw in this new demographic that will, you know, hold a big chunk of the consumer spending dollar in years to come?
Okay. The millennial customers are very important for us. As I said earlier, so we have a lot of customers buying online. And also we have been selling through TV sales.
Like
Go Shop and Wow Shop. And so far, I must say that every time that we go on air, we sold out our products. So it's been great. So coming back to the millennials, I don't think that the diamond industry or jewelry industry is affected by the millennial, especially in Malaysia. Because if you really think about it, the young people in Malaysia, they are still traditional in nature. Meaning you get a lot of people going overseas to study and all that. When they come back, they still come back to tradition. So when they want to get married, they go back to tradition, and we normally have a traditional wedding. So they still go, come back to buy a diamond wedding ring. Nobody is giving a costume jewelry for their wedding or something. So they just come back, and we still have the tea ceremonies. We still have hantaran and all the other things that we do. So there's no change in that trend. The only difference that we have with millennials is we have a slightly different way of handling the millennials, because they also want to know. They want the business to be more transparent as before. You know, like many years ago when I started, you don't even know what is actually the goal, because they used to say Chinese gold, Indian gold, and Kelantan gold, and all these kind of things. There's no proper definition for that. But that has been changed. So, for example, if you're buying gold, it's 916 means 91.6% must be pure gold, and the rest are alloy.
Okay.
So, also, when we sell a gold chain, those days they used to have what they call a susot or wastage. Something may be 90-something gram, but actually they will sell it as 100 gram because they were allowed to charge a wastage. But we don't do that. You know, we actually sell the actual weight. Not only that, we have a weighing scale right in front of our store so that people can actually go and weigh. So there's more transparency. Today, millennials want to know that if the gold that we are selling is ethically sourced, the diamond that we are selling, gemstones that we are selling, is it ethically sourced? So what is our supply chain?
Yes.
And all these different type of things, you know. So I think it makes it very much easier for Habib because we are also a manufacturing company. We can trace back from the mining to somebody's finger, right? So we purchased our raw material ethically, and then we design them ourselves, and we produce it in our factory. And actually, we even welcome some of our customers to our factory to actually have a look at it. So they actually come and discuss with our designers. So we come up with a special designs just for them. You know, they wanted something more exclusive. These are some of the things that we do, especially for the millennials. So it's very relevant.
Okay. Well, earlier talking about costume jewelry, I think that has gained popularity due to the high crime rate and also the cost of just pricing, because the jewelry industry it can be quite pricey to buy like a real diamond or real gold. I think even competition from cubic zirconia, I think it looks exactly like a diamond, a real diamond. So what are you doing about things like that? Like, what are your strategies to combat rising competition?
I think the best way to do that is education. So one of the things that I have been doing from 1986 is since I graduated and I came back, I also did a course on gemology. And we have been getting a lot of consumers coming in and said, oh, you know, diamonds are more expensive in Malaysia and, you know, it's cheaper in South Africa or Amsterdam and all these different things. So since then, we have been holding a lot of seminars. We have been doing a lot of, you know, interviews and explaining, for example, the four C's, then how do you value the diamonds for, you know, so that people can understand a lot better as to what they are buying. And they make the decision whether, you know, the quality of jewelry or diamonds that we're selling are better or not. So when people start making comparison apple to apple, then suddenly they realize that Malaysia is the best place to buy jewelry in the world.
Yeah.
Yes, because, you know, since June, for example, there's no longer GST.
Yeah.
And jewelry is also not subject to SST. So that means there is zero tax in Malaysia for jewelry. And the overhead expenses to run a business in Malaysia is one of the lowest. KL is one of the lowest. And this has been proven. And, you know, there's a lot of surveys been done. And the proof is Kuala Lumpur is one of the best cities in the world, five best cities in the world to shop. And in terms of value, we came out number one. So coming back to jewellery, jewellery industry itself is very matured in Malaysia. So we have great talents, not just designing, but manufacturing. So our cost is very low and we can be very competitive. So Malaysia is actually really a good place. So there's no reason for anyone to be buying something else, because as I said earlier, it is also an investment. So people can buy jewelry and they can also sell and get value. You can't do that.
Is there a proper secondary market for that?
Yes.
There is
a proper secondary market for that. And not only that, you can go back to our stores and sell. And even if you want to get financing, for example, we have Aranu Express, which is actually an Islamic pawn shop. Someone can just bring their diamond ring and you know, temporarily get a loan, you know, for a while, like if they're having some cash flow issues, and they can come back and get their diamond ring back, you know. So these are things can be done, and it's been proven.
Well, looking at your earnings, Habib's revenue is up year on year for its FY 2017 to nearly 300 million ringgit, but profit has fallen more than half to 3 million ringgit. What happened?
Okay, so as far as the turnover is concerned, there's a few things that involve. One is that although the turnover is high, the profit can fall is because of the gold price change. Mm-hmm. And also, you may realize that also the exchange rate did weaken. Mm. So we cannot be actually increasing the price so much. So what we were doing was we were working with a high turnover and low margin. Mm. And as also you can imagine that internationally, there has been a lot of competition all over the world. People from different parts of the world are coming. But on the other hand, we can see that this year as well, that our sales has also increased even more. Beside what what you have mentioned, what Habib has done is we went back and invested back a lot into other things. Like, for example, we have set up an academy for training, and we have increased the number of staff. So during this interim period, we have invested back in the human resource part, and we have now about 1,200 employees in our group. Mm. We have also an academy that we have just set up in terms of training. So we are putting back investment into the company.
Well, so as the retail price of gold, because the steep fall in gold prices, that has negatively impacted your margins, as you mentioned. So as the retail price is lower than the inventory cost, because you've procured it at a higher cost, mm-hmm. what is your margins today? How much has that impacted your margins?
Okay, I mean, the margins... There's always a up and down for the gold price. Mm-hmm. So today I would say that everything has stabilized.
Okay.
So
it's been normalized.
It's normalized already, yeah. So that was actually just a temporary part.
So the normal stock turnaround for gold jewelry is about 3 to 4 months, from what I understand. Mm-hmm. Old stock, that's when your old stock is sold and new ones are replenished. Mm-hmm. So you're saying that our margins have normalized already. What is your outlook for the business moving forward?
I think the outlook is great. I think if we really look at especially the second half of this year, our sales has gone up quite good, maybe 20 to 30% growth in terms of our sales. So I think that is, since there was a big jump in growth this year, so in 2019, we may expect maybe about a 10 to 15% growth. So,
no, you don't think that was one-off, the bump, the GST zero-rated and SSC? You don't think so? It's sustainable. It's not cyclical, the bump in your sales.
It is sustainable in that sense that we are not expecting a big jump, but I think we will continue to do whatever it takes, because it's not just the industry. I think it's more of what we are doing personally. So I'm pretty confident that with the training and with all the different strategies that we are coming up with, we will maintain our sales.
I've been speaking to Dato' Sri Mir Sadiq Habib, Managing Director of Habib Jewels. Dato', thank you for being on The Breakfast Grill today. It was a pleasure having you on the show. I'm Joyce Goh for The Breakfast Grill on The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Thank you, Joyce.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, Frost & Sullivan Malaysia's mobile data service provider of the year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.